Why is it important to believe that Jesus was and is divine? That he has always been there and always will be? Welcome to The Good Word and our discussions of the wonder of Jesus. My conversation partners are again Larry Vavirka and Paul Dibdolf from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome.
Thank you, Alden.
Alden, I'm really looking forward to spending this quarter talking about these things with you.
Well, I've been looking forward to you as well, working with you, man. My question is, why is it so important for Jesus to be seen as divine? Why can't he just be a messenger sent from God? Why is it important that he be God in the flesh?
I see what you're saying, Paul. This is a complicated question. Well, let me tackle one segment of it, though. And that is that I think it became an issue in the early church. Always that question is in the air, who is Jesus? I mean, who is this man who can do these things, you know? And that sense of wonder about him persisted. And as the understanding grew that this person is certainly God appointed, but as they remember the stories and they remember allusions and they remember things that he said, the conviction comes that in some way he is more than human, he's divine. And that then creates a real conundrum for a person of Jewish conviction and belief in monotheistic theology. How can you have someone here on earth who is divine praying to, talking to, asking permission to do things, acknowledging someone who's in heaven, who obviously is God? That then pushes them towards this sort of pluralism that they disdained incredibly and prized in their monotheism. So in the early church, you have a number of attempts to explain this conundrum, of which most of them are bogus. And it's John who, at the end of the century, with these on the platter, attempts to write a definitive theology regarding Christ's divinity.
Paul, do you have a P.S. to add to that, or maybe chapter 1 and 2?
I'm not sure what exactly to call my comments here, but to me, as Larry indicated right at the beginning, why is it important is a huge question, and I'm not sure that we, even if we took all of this quarter, I don't know we'd be able to fully plumb the depths of that. A couple of thoughts which may seem overly simplistic, but there's a sense in which it seems right that God, who created us, is also somehow the one who ultimately recreates us and restores us.
Mm-hmm.
He made the world good. It's gone terribly wrong. And he doesn't delegate the responsibility to some other, you know, some pawn, some created thing, but that it is God himself who fixes the problem, who restores and redeems us. And that, to me, is there's something important about that aspect of it. And the second comment is just, this doesn't address so much as why it's important, but I think that the fact that Jesus was God is crucial in the sense that it gives us sort of concrete revelation of who God is, how God operates.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus provides that opportunity. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. That's tremendously important for us that be the case.
You see, in my experience, this was a terribly important discovery for me, and I was very late in making it. I'm a fourth generation Seventh-day Adventist, a graduate of Walla Walla College in theology. I was a second-year seminary student at Andrews University before I discovered, from John 14-17, that Jesus was God incarnate. Now, as I've thought about that, I think what threw me off was the pictures of Jesus pleading his blood to the Father, as if the Father needed to be convinced.
Mm-hmm.
And even in John 3:16, you have the Father sending the Son. See, so there are a lot of images, And what was so crucial for me is that if God himself came down here, he really must want me in his kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I had struggled with as a conscientious and sensitive child was the picture of a reluctant, almost hostile God who surely wouldn't find me good enough to take into his kingdom. Mm-hmm. But if he himself came down here and took on human flesh, then he really must want me there. So that was just a huge discovery for me.
And I'm convinced that many, many people have not made that kind of connection. They think of God the Father, and they think of the stern, exacting, the one that you must fear. And they think of Jesus as their friend, not realizing what you just said.
Well, I remember a story. George Bandeman called me up after I had written some pieces for our church paper. And he told a story about a professor at Pacific Union College whose little girl got up one day. There had been a storm in the night, and there was a lot of broken branches and things in the yard. And she says, "Daddy, who did all this? It couldn't have been Jesus. He's too nice. It must have been God."
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That idea of, and of course you go back to the Old Testament, you get too close to Mount Sinai. Even if Fido gets too close to Mount Sinai, he gets clobbered, see? Quite a contrast with Jesus, who takes the little children on his lap, see?
How do you put Jesus back on Mount Sinai with Fido?
We'll talk about that later. We've got several later weeks to solve all these problems, Larry. We don't have to solve them all at once. Now, in John, also in John, we have this amazing statement, John 8:58. Where Jesus says, "Before Abraham was, I am." And the Jewish leaders just went ballistic over that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What was problematic with that?
Well, two reasons. Which one do you want to tackle?
Go ahead, Larry.
Well, for one, it was blasphemy to say the name of God out loud. I mean, they did so much to reverence, to hold God's name in reverence, they wouldn't even say it. They would say another word. They would say the word for Lord in its place when reading scripture, when praying, in any sort of setting. So to hear it spoken out loud was terrifying, terrible.
And when he says, "I am," that ego eimi, that is considered to be the equivalent of the great I Am.
Yes, it's when Moses wanted to know who God was, when I go back to deliver Israel from Egypt, who do I say sent me? What's your name? And the Lord responds with this self-designation. He is to tell them that the I Am has sent you. So Jesus is calling himself
the I Am.
The I Am, God.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as you said, is blasphemy. And then to speak it even worse.
Yes. Now, we mentioned this earlier in our conversation here, that it was really quite astonishing to hear that Jesus was God in the flesh. What could be dangerous about that? I mean, we've talked a little bit about the good news. I've talked about it in my own experience. But why would it be dangerous to say that God's messenger is actually God himself?
I'm not sure if I... Maybe I'm missing the...
Well, the Jewish leaders were horrified at this, and when Jesus tried to make claims that pushed in that direction, who can forgive sins but God? And Jesus was nudging his followers all the way through to accept the truth that he was God in human flesh. But every time he got very close to it, they would say, "Oh, no, that couldn't be true."
Well, just thinking today, if we had someone today that claimed to be God, We don't expect that of people. We don't expect that God would be present in the flesh among us.
We occasionally do have people making that claim, and we try to isolate them from the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
We put them in white jackets and marshal them away somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a danger. Is that what you're thinking of?
Well, did Jesus show any kind of that kind of danger, his claims? Did he use those claims to hurt other people, to threaten people, to destroy society? Were Jesus' claims to do what God does, were they inappropriate or were there helpful? Now, that's probably part of what we're going to be discussing this whole quarter, the wonder of Jesus.
It's certainly problematic for Jewish leaders because what he did led to certainly notoriety among the people. He became popular. People began to follow him, and that would then be a threat to them and their position as spiritual authorities. So you can get into a lot of trouble doing good.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a terrible threat to some people by being good.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that in the conversation Jesus is having with the Jewish leaders in which he makes this I am claim or identity, he's already been accused of having a demon or being crazy or insane.
Mm-hmm.
And he tops it off by his assertion that he had firsthand knowledge of Abraham because he talked with him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is true that that's not the sort of thing we would accept from another human being.
And of course, from the standpoint of biblical revelation, you have a sovereign God in the Old Testament that if you step out of line, this God will strike you down. That certainly was the message at Sinai, see? And when you recognize that this God incarnate came down here to die, then you have this astonishing contrast that the Old Testament God comes to kill, and in the New Testament, God comes to die. That's a huge contrast. Terribly important, Christians would say.
So you're saying, and on the one hand, then, if he really revealed himself to be God in an understandable way, that he would be responded to with fear, and if he didn't act in this terrifying way, that he would set himself up for rejection.
So you have this amazing contrast, and we'll have a chance to explore it. But when Peter, for example, after Jesus' miracles, even the miracle of the fish, all of a sudden he says, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man."
Mm-hmm.
When a sinner recognizes that he's in the presence of holiness, it is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what's going on here. So most of us don't know how to handle that very well either.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look at the claim that Jesus, the mystery of deity, that's terribly important, that's part of the story. Next week, we will pick up another side of it, the reality of his humanity. And as you suggested, Larry, the church has always tussled to try to bring these two together. And yet, both are claims that Scripture makes, that he was fully human, that he was fully divine. And that's the topic that we're going to continue to explore. So thank you to both of you for your contributions. And my thanks also to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer. And thank you to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.